At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Check one, two. Check one, two. Welcome to the Film Room Podcast. I am your host, Andy Proctor, and in this show, I break down the game of college football to give you a quick listen scouting report to give you everything you'll need to know each week as the Utes and Cougs buckle up their chin straps. Listen in and level up. The Film Room is your weekly game plan. Break. All right, everybody, welcome to week 10 of the college football season. Like I said, my name is Andy Proctor. I'm the host of the pod. And first and foremost, I have to apologize for missing a week. Not going to lie, I just got behind a little bit last week. I did a bunch of the prep for Utah, Colorado. Got only to a little bit of my prep for BYU, Iowa State, and I just couldn't get it done in time. I had work and house stuff and family stuff, just crazy week. So I apologize for not getting the episode out. Although, as it turns out, not much prep needed for Utah, Colorado, as Utah stomps the Buffs at home 53-7. This is old news for a lot of you. We're getting this episode out a little bit late this week as well, on late Wednesday night, Thursday morning, as most of the time, as mostly when most people are going to, you know, see this episode first. It's been well established that the Utes are back running on all cylinders again after losing to BYU the week prior. I think the Utes came out angry, focused, angry, kind of pissed off, I'm sure, ready to prove to the world that they are better than their two losses this year. And boy, did they do that. They came out and beat, like I said, Colorado 53-7. And they logged like 400 yards of offense in the first half, and Colorado was held to negative 18 in that same half. So Utah came out, looked really good. The story of the game, I think, was freshman quarterback Bird Ficklin stepping in for Devin Dampier, who was a little bit hobbled and felt like he could go if he had to, but gave the opportunity to Bird to step up and see if he could lead, and he did a great job. He was killer on the ground. He had more yards on the ground than he did through the air. He had the ball 20 times and carried it for 151 yards and a touchdown. The second play of the game, 63-yard touchdown jaunt by Bird Ficklin. He was 10 for 22, which is not great, but he had 140 yards of passing and two touchdowns. So honestly, for this kid, you know, gosh, almost 300 yards of offensive production, responsible for three touchdowns in the game. That I thought was phenomenal. The rushing game was awesome as well from Wayshon Parker, who had 10 carries for 145 yards and one touchdown. Nate Johnson, it's good to see him back out running the ball. He had a long sprint for 56 yards and a touchdown. And just great offensive production from the Utes. They came out, and Colorado really didn't know what hit them. You know what I mean? So receiving, again, I think, you know, Utah had some good, modest production from a bunch of guys. There were maybe four or five guys that had, you know, a pair of catches and, you know, 30 or 40 yards receiving each. You'd love to see the Utes be able to do a little bit more through the air. But again, considering the fact that you have a freshman quarterback who's stepping in and having his first true start of the season, you know, he's gotten a lot of playing time, Bird Ficklin has. And it hasn't always been garbage time per se, but it's usually been garbage time. So, you know, more than happy to end up with that kind of score, that kind of response to a disappointing loss down in Provo, and more importantly, that kind of momentum heading into what is now, you know, it's hard to say. I think Utah versus Texas Tech, I think, was their biggest game of the season so far. Utah versus BYU, arguably, maybe emotionally, was bigger. you know, as far as, you know, their ability to stay in the running for the Big 12 championship game. BYU-Utah became their biggest game of the season. And then now, kind of for similar reasons, this Utah-Cincinnati game this coming week, a huge game for both teams this weekend. I think whichever team ends up losing this game is going to be very, very disappointed, very, very regretful. So anyway, saw a lot of great things out of Utah. It was fun to see them have fun again. You know, they had a fake punt. They haven't faked a punt in a long, long time. So you can kind of see Coach Witt, Coach Beck, and Coach Scally kind of, you know, we use the term sitting on your pockets when talking about a while. It's almost like they're sitting on their playbooks, right? They're not wanting to let a whole lot of stuff out. They're still being really conservative with their play calls here in the middle of the season. And it's fun to see them kind of open it up and do some stuff that you wouldn't normally see out of Utah in this type of situation. So anyway, that's the very quick film review for Utah versus Colorado. Like I said, not much film to review because it was such a dominant win. This coming week, big, big, big game against the Cincinnati Bearcats. Bearcats. Number 17 Cincinnati comes to town to play number 22 Utah. Utah keeps on, you know, getting into the top 25 and then falling back out of the top 25 and getting back in and falling back out. Hopefully this time they can just stay in and keep on climbing that ladder. It's number 17 Cincinnati versus number 22 Utah at home at Rice-Eccles Stadium on Saturday night at 8:15. It's supposed to be not too chilly, about, you know, between 55 and 60 degrees at kickoff, and we'll get down to the high 40s by the end of the game, you know, around 12:30, 1 o'clock. Utah is currently projected to win by about 7 points despite the lower ranking. I have a feeling that it has to do with the quality of Utah's two losses, as well as the fact that the game will be cold late at night, up high in the Wasatch Mountain Range. You know, maybe given some of those factors, giving Cincinnati a hard time. Cincinnati this year has been phenomenal. They've exceeded, I think, pretty much everybody's expectations. They dropped their first game of the year in a close one against Nebraska, but since then they have rattled off 7 wins in a row, or 7-1. The most notable wins of the year are against Iowa State and Baylor, two teams who showed some Big 12 promise earlier this year, but they both of those teams have played short of their standards so far. You know, Cincinnati, if they pull off that game against Nebraska, very easily could be undefeated. This team looks a lot more dangerous than I think anybody expected that they would. But why aren't they ranked higher? You know, for a team that's 7-1, why aren't they ranked higher than 17th? Likely because the rest of their wins come against teams like Bowling Green, Northwestern State, UCF, Oklahoma State, who's playing horribly this year. Besides Iowa State, Utah is really the only other, you know, quote unquote, good football team that Cincy has played this year, though they still have a top 10 matchup coming up in 2 weeks against BYU. In regards to this game, I think people in general, number one, they're not giving as much respect to the Big 12. That's for sure compared to the Big 10 and the SEC. But even just for Cincinnati themselves, I think that people are taking kind of overall history and brand recognition into their reckoning of this football game. I think it's part of the reason why Utah is slated to, you know, they're picked to win by about 7 points. Here's the thing though, to remember about Cincinnati and the thing to remember about Utah, Cincinnati has been to the college football playoff. Utah hasn't. In 2021, the Bearcats, as the number 4 seed, lost to the number 1 seeded Alabama in the Cotton Bowl semifinal on New Year's Eve that year. They had a great year. They were able to get into the 14 playoff, which I think is so impressive. You know, Utah, as good as they were, you know, in those, you know, 2018, 19, 21, 22, those years, never managed to play a complete enough season to break into that 4-team college football playoff. You know, now if you get in, it's sweet, it's great, but it's you know, the bar has been lowered, as it were. Speaking of this series, you know, matchup, Utah and Cincinnati, these two teams have never played each other in football. So they'll both be eager to set the tone for the future. Diving in to the scouting report, Cincinnati's offense, generally speaking, a very run-pass option-oriented offense. The quarterback is responsible for 20 touchdowns through the air, one interception. This is a very complete roster, I think. They have three guys that have rushed for over 400 yards. They have four guys that have had over 300 yards of receiving. The team itself typically averages about 200 yards rushing and, you know, between 280 and 290 yards receiving per game. This is a complete team, dude. Honestly, after watching the film, it could be fair to say that this is the most complete offense that Utah has faced all year, including, I think, both BYU and Texas Tech. I think that BYU is a pretty complete team. They definitely have some holes in running back depth and a freshman quarterback who was held up better than anyone could have hoped, by the way. But, you know, I think Bear Bachmeier for BYU definitely has left something to be desired, you know, with some of his play and decisions he's made and kind of the middle portion of this season so far. You know, I think Texas Tech looked really good, but they've had some injuries, you know, to the quarterback. And Cincinnati, on the other hand, looks pretty dang dangerous at every position on the offensive side of the ball. Starting at number two, quarterback Brendan Sorsby. He is 6'3", 235. He's a big dude. He doesn't look that big on film. The way he moves fast. He does not look like he's 6'3", 235. Reminds me of, with that size and agility, kind of a Taysom Hill. He's got 205 attempts throwing the ball this year. He's got 65% completion percentage. He's got 1,843 yards, 20 touchdowns, and one interception. Very, very impressive stat line. 20 touchdowns to one interception is...
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Wild. Also, he's only been sacked twice on the whole year, so offensive line is doing something right. He's logged 425 yards of rushing and 7 touchdowns on the ground for 69 carries. That's 27 touchdowns responsible for through 8 games, or 3.5, basically, touchdowns per game. Brendan Sorsby gives me Sam Levitt vibes. We didn't get to see Sam Levitt play this year at Rice Eccles Stadium, but it, like I said, he reminds me of what we expected to see from Sam. Brendan Sorsby, obviously very talented on his feet. We just talked about his running game. The film shows how agile and fast and decisive he is with the ball, though. I had previously said that Sam Levitt was going to be the best quarterback that Morgan Scalley's defense had faced, but considering the fact that Sam didn't play last month, Brendan Sorsby is going to kind of inherit that title of best QB that Utah has faced. His agility and his speed allow him to create more opportunities through the air, but believe me, he doesn't really need it. He's great at making these quick decisions with their RPO stuff. Occasionally, he'll take a little bit too long, and they get a couple ineligible man downfield penalties. But generally speaking, you know, he makes good decisions quickly. If he needs to sit in the pocket and go through his progressions, though, he can kind of get antsy. He's definitely a run first quarterback with pressure, but he doesn't get his blinders on. You know, he'll still keep his eyes up downfield while his legs do the work. Like I said, I think this is the best quarterback that Utah will have actually faced all year long. Going into the running back room, the two other 400-yard rushers are Oklahoma/Wisconsin transfer number 3, Tawee Walker. At 5'8", he has loaded an impressive 218 pounds on his frame, which has helped him record his 466 yards on the ground, 4 touchdowns, and 4 yards per carry. Walker is the primary ball carrier, but he's only logged about 30 more carries than the other big runner, another transfer this time from Ohio State, number 6, Evan Pryor. Me personally, looking at the film, I'd be more worried about Evan Pryor. 5'9", 195. He's a senior who's logged nearly 500 yards and 3 touchdowns. He gets over 7 yards a pop. like I said, Tubby Walker, you know, from the minimal film that I watched two or three games, kind of game summaries. It seems like he's a good runner. Seems like he has to be good to be playing football at this level. But I just don't see maybe the speed or the kind of just the drive that you see from Evan Pryor. Evan Pryor, he gets downfield hard and fast. He runs with anger. You know, when he gets to that line or when he gets to a tackle, he you can tell he runs angry, which is really great. Besides the three 400 yard rushers, you know, quarterback Brandon Sorsby, Tubby Walker, running back Evan Pryor, they don't really rush the ball with anybody else besides those people. So there's not much to pay attention to. As far as the receiving game is concerned, tight ends. Bearcats go to their big man number 11, Joe Roger. Not Rogan, Roger. 6'5", 250. Big dude. Joe is Cincinnati's third leading receiver at 22 catches and 340 yards. He's gotten in the end zone four times. His longest reception is 73 yards, so you know he's got some pretty phenomenal speed despite hauling 250 pounds around with him all the time. He gets a lot of targets. Definitely a guy that Utah will have to pay attention to. Try to get a good linebacker matchup against him because he could cause some big problems for Utah defensively. Wide receiving room. I will say this about the receiving core. They have a lot of veterans. They are experienced. They're complete and complementary. They each have different sizes, weights, different strengths, different usages. Each player has their moment and gets their moment. I suspect that Coach Scally is going to have a very specific plan for each of these guys as to who will cover who. Starting with number four, Cyrus Allen, the smallest of all the receivers, at least these three we're going to talk about. 5'11", 180-pound senior. He's got 34 receptions for 380-ish yards, 9 touchdowns, and he averages 11 yards per catch. Okay, so Cyrus Allen, number four, kind of the quick, speedy, smaller guy. He's able to get open in space. Once he gets the ball, he can accelerate, can move really quickly, avoid some tackles, maybe take it to the house. Number 10, Caleb Goody, 6'1", 178. He's kind of more the medium-sized receiver. He's over 6 foot. He's got 360-ish yards, only 2 touchdowns, but he averages about 20 yards per catch. He did have a long 82-yard catch one of these games, so that's kind of skewed his numbers a little bit. He did fumble the ball against Nebraska on a good tackle. So, you know, in number 10, if I'm Morgan Scally, I'm working on, you know, putting my helmet right on the ball and see if we can force a turnover. Last receiver, largest of the three, number 9, Jeff Caldwell, 6'5", 215-pound senior. He's got fewer receptions, only 20. But with those, he's got, you know, 300 and almost 40 yards of receiving, 3 touchdowns. He averages about 17 yards per reception. Offensive line, I don't have a whole lot here for the offensive line. These guys seem pretty decent overall. As I mentioned earlier, they've only allowed 2 sacks all year for Brandon Sorsby, which should speak, you know, enough as to the quality of the guys that make up this front five. I think it's going to be a challenge for Utah to do something against them. Getting a little bit deeper into their offensive playbook, they run almost everything out of shotgun or pistol. Again, I did see a couple under center snaps, but most of the things you'll want to pay attention to are coming out of the shotgun or pistol. Run blocking schemes, a lot of basic stuff with those two running backs I mentioned, Pryor and Tubby Walker. Okay, they'll do lots of power where they run off to the one side and maybe you pull a backside guard or a backside kind of H-back. They like their options. They like a read option. They like a speed option. And they'll do kind of an interesting triple option out of the gun as well. So not only will Utah and their defense have to play sound defensive kind of option-based defense from the triple option perspective, but also from the RPO perspective, which is what we had mentioned earlier. They kind of, you know, is their bread and butter. A whole slew of routes that they're frequently using. What you have to be aware of for the RPO, which again is run pass option, is that the routes have to be fairly quick because the ball has to get out and be thrown. If the quarterback decides to keep it and throw it, the ball has to be thrown before one of the offensive linemen get more than 5 yards downfield, which is a problem you've seen Cincinnati have. Is, you know, the quarterback, either he's trying to fake and sell the run, and then he pulls up to throw, or maybe he's just trying to make a decision. It takes a little while to decide, hey, am I going to hand this off or you know, keep it and throw it. Just take some time to make some of these decisions, and it's kind of left his team out to dry by having, you know, letting offensive linemen get further downfield. Anyway. That's kind of what you're looking for from the offensive perspective. Lots of quick routes. They will also run more standard non-RPO routes that are a standard spread option type of offense, if you will. Lots of tight end or wide receiver hitches, drags across the formation. They do a thing where they take one of the receivers, run a jet motion across the field, run a little arrow route to the flat. They like the halfback swings, stuff like that, checkdowns. And honestly, then Brendan Sorsby, he gets a lot of his passing just on scrambling and redirecting guys. So it's going to be one of those days where Utah probably has to practice, you know, staying on guys after, you know, the quarterback is scrambled. Some offensive stats for Cincinnati, defensive stats for Utah. Overall, Cincinnati's offense will log about 337 yards per game, which is, you know, top 30 in college football. Versus Utah will only allow 284 yards per game, which is good for 12th in college football. Utah, this game is going to have to play assignment sound football, you know, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Every position group will have to play within the scheme of defending a triple option. All hats to the ball, things like that. I would be surprised if we see as much pressure or blitzing from Coach Scally as we saw him use against Colorado this week. Passing game, Cincinnati logs about 242 yards per game, which is good for 60th, which pales in comparison to Utah's pass defense, which allows about 100 yards less than that per game, which is good for 7th in college football. So that's a big mismatch there. You know, number 7 pass defense versus number 60 passing offense. We know that John Henry Daly for Utah is only one sack away from leading college football in sacks. With him and guys like Logan Fano on the defensive line, I would love to see Utah be the first team to really make Brendan Sorsby feel uncomfortable in the pocket, maybe get a couple sacks. They rush for about 200 yards per game, like I said, which is good for 31st. Utah allows for about 60 yards less than that, 136 yards per game. I think this is the game, this area right here, rushing, is where the game could potentially be won or lost. It seems like a cliche because it's said so often, but it's only because it's true. The battle for who's, you know, most physical will determine how Saturday night ends. Can you be physical? Can you be smart? Can you take care of your responsibility, your assignment? Can you absorb impact? Can you wrap up? Can you get the better of the man across from you, right? All these things, you know, really big in the rushing game, but just in the game in general. Scoring. Cincinnati tends to score 38 points per game, which is good for 13th in the country. It's pretty awesome. It's a pretty productive offense. But 13th on scoring is not as good as 9th on defending scoring. Utah only allows 14.5 points per game scored. So we're going to have to see how it ends up, obviously. How many points is Utah going to allow Cincinnati to get? By the way, it's worth noting that, I forget the number exactly, but Cincinnati outscores their opponents by like a lot, by a multitude of factors, multitude of you know, numbers. Where they score like 100 points in the quarter over a couple games, and the defense will score like 10 or 15 or something like that. So they do really, really well in the first quarter. So Utah's ability to bottle them up from the very start is going to be huge. Moving on to the defensive side of the ball for Cincinnati. Generally speaking, Cincinnati likes to run a 3-3-5. Which we have seen before. It's just less common, less frequent. Now, if you've watched BYU at all for the last 10 years, you've gotten familiar with a three-man front. But BYU has always run a 3-4, so you still have between 6 and 7 men in the box. And when I say the box, I mean, you know, if you were to draw a line, you know, between the two offensive tackles and maybe back 5 yards or so behind the line of scrimmage, that little box there, that square box, is kind of an area that determines a lot of how much pressure you're bringing and how you're trying to approach defending a team that runs the ball a lot. Okay, do you have very few guys in the box? Do you have 4, maybe 5 guys, maybe 6 guys in the box? Versus some teams have, like Cincinnati, for example, they'll have 3, maybe 4 guys in the box at any given time, which leaves them very open and exposed potentially. Anyway, so that's you know, something to pay attention to. In BYU's, you know, 3-4, all gaps are accounted for pretty easily because you got guys that are all in the box. But Cincinnati leaves gaps unattended as they have very wide, very atypical defensive line splits. For example, they'll have a nose tackle, a guy just right over the center, and then they'll have 2 defensive ends pretty wide, like a 7 or a 9 technique, which puts them outside of the offensive tackles. And they just trust that their linebackers will plug the middle from 5 or 6 yards deep. And a lot of times they're okay at doing it, you know. Defensive line personnel, in the couple games I watched, the Iowa State and Nebraska games, since he plays a lot of different guys on the defensive line, just to save us some time, energy, and brain power, a lot of these guys play very similar games. So I'm going to lump a lot of them together in this category. None of them are exceedingly fast. They are strong and have good size, but they get vertical off the ball, which means, you know, when the snap happens and they get off the ball, they don't get off very horizontally or low and get, you know, kind of get that lower center of gravity. They stand upright. And this kind of lends itself to ball carriers getting to that second level easier. Because these guys are going to get pushed off the ball pretty well, right? There's just a lot more space on that first line of defense, which is why they're, you know, Cincinnati's best tackler on the defensive line is the team's 14th highest tackler. There are 13 players that have more tackles than their leading tackling defensive lineman. Utah should very likely and very often get their running backs to the second or third level. In regard to the pass defense, their pass rush is better than their run stopping, but they still don't put a ton of pressure on quarterbacks. I haven't seen, you know, any of them really make a stand, I haven't seen any of them really stand out and make me think, you know, boy, Utah better watch out for number so-and-so. I think that Utah's O-line will be up to the task this weekend. They'll be up to the challenge, whether it's Devin or Bird at the helm. As long as they aren't too indecisive with the football, they shouldn't be in danger of getting sacked. Although they will likely be pressured at some point. Anyway, if there's anyone to pay attention to on the defensive line, it would be big defensive tackle number 90, Jalen Hunt. He is 6'2", 315 pounds. He's gigantic. He has 2.5 sacks. Number 4, Micah Coleman. He's 6'4", 272 pounds. He's got 1 sack. As I mentioned above, he's kind of like the rest of these athletes where he has a tendency to be too, I'm going to call it kind of too froggy in his 4-point stance, meaning his feet are too underneath him, his chest is too vertical, which leads to him standing straight upright on his get off. This makes it easier to get leverage and kind of blow him off the ball. He isn't particularly fast, so if I was Coach Jason Beck, I would run off tackle runs right at this guy pretty much all day long. Number 98, left end Marquand Parker. He's 6'2", 285. He's not super fast, but he has a great motor. He does a good job of getting his arms extended to control his opponent, and he's probably the guy that shows the most promise out of all of these defensive linemen. Moving on to the linebacking core. Number one guy to pay attention to is number 11, Jake Golday, 6'4", 240-pound senior. He has 67 tackles. 6'7", 6'7". he has 67 tackles, 3.5 sacks, and 1 forced fumble. he's been known to have his eyes in the backfield on run-pass options or jet motions, which is ironic considering the amount of jet RPOs and jet RPOs that Cincinnati runs themselves. He's pretty fast off the ball. He's just fast in general, actually. He rushes the pass really well. He covers really well. Number 11, big guy to pay attention to. If we can block him, we'll have a day. Number 22, Jonathan Thompson, 6'2", 230-pound junior. He's the third leading tackler on the team with 41 tackles. He's got one sack, one forced fumble, one fumble recovery. Number 22, Jonathan Thompson, he's a good-looking linebacker. He gives me kind of Isaiah Glasker vibes. He's got a long reach. He's got good, strong legs. He covers well in pass situations. He gets downhill fast. He sprints to the ball. I, for one, would not mind having number 22 on my team. Number 49, Jack Dingle, 6'4", 240-pound senior. He's got two sacks. He kind of embodies what I was saying earlier, with some of the defensive linemen. His feet kind of get stationary. He gets stationary in his pass drops, and he gets stationary with his run defense. He's a good run stopper just because of his size and his strength, but a lot of times he just digs his heels in and tries to use that size and strength to make the stop. If he's going to be stationary and try to stand you up, then if I'm Coach Mark Atuaya, Utah's running back coach, I'm having my guys focus on spinning or jump cutting a linebacker who doesn't move his feet very well, and I'm also having them work on driving their feet, drive after contact, just to try to push him over. This guy is big, but stationary feet don't generally work out so well with well-coached running backs. Generally speaking about this linebacking core, I do think it's interesting that Cincinnati makes a name off of running the RPO, but so many of their linebackers as a group are so prone to bite on them. They like to do a lot of simulated pressures, which means they have the standard three-man front, but they bring a linebacker off the edge to combine for a four-man pressure. They also will do something more in short yardage situations where they will show six rushers and then bring four. The two linebackers will drop off pretty quick, or safeties. They don't stunt that often if they aren't bringing pressure, because it's just too much distance to cover for those defensive linemen to twist or cross or do anything like that and still get to the quarterback in time. They will definitely twist and slant and do all these different types of stemming or stunting when they bring actual simulated pressures, where we have five plus pass rushers. One particular package I saw from them during the Iowa State game that I thought was interesting was they had all three defensive linemen coming at the offense from the left side of the field, the strong side, the field side of the formation, leaving the entire kind of short and right side of the field covered by just, I guess the other side of the field, the left side of the field, covered by just a single linebacker and the boundary side corner. They were obviously trying to push a right-handed quarterback, Rocco Becht, into the sideline and away from his comfortable throwing angle. But I was shocked that Iowa State didn't see this and just audible, just run the ball at the two-man side. They didn't do that. I think it's safe to say that defensive coordinator Tyson Vaight is open to some uncommon or untraditional defenses, their formations, their fronts, all those things. They have been known to bring some safety blitzes. Okay. Getting more specific about personnel from a defensive back perspective, they've got a lot of guys to pay attention to. Okay. First one, number six, strong safety, number six, Trevon Gola Collard. I probably butchered that. I'm so sorry. He's a strong safety, or at least I think he is. Cincinnati likes to switch up their alignments a lot. You got one guy who one play he'll line up as a cornerback, one play he lines up in the center of the field like he's a strong safety or a free safety, something like that. So take this all with a grain of salt. Number six, Trevon Gola Collard, 6 foot, 195-pound senior. He's got 50 tackles. I think that's good for the first on the team. Three pass deflections. He's got really good play recognition, which is likely why he leads the team in tackles. free safety or maybe cornerback number 8, or Monty Arnold. This dude does an excellent job in pursuit, does a great job at breaking his feet down. He's been known to kind of lunge for some of his tackles, so I'm hoping to see any of our running backs or receivers make him miss. Number 5, I believe, is the weak safety, Christian Harrison. He's 6 foot, 195 pounds. He's got 6 pass deflections, which is impressive. He gets his hands up on the ball. Number 46, another defensive back sub, I think. Maybe a safety kind of sub, Antoine Peake Jr. He's 6 foot, 1, 214 pounds. He's got 2 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery, one sack. He's a big dude. He can lay a hit. He's just out there to hit and have fun. As is this guy, number 7, or the right side cornerback, Logan Wilson. This dude has got some heart. He emanates intensity and passion. He hits people like it looks like it kind of turns him on a little bit, the way he hits people. I look forward to seeing who Logan Wilson matches up against on Saturday night, because it could be quite an emotional back and forth kind of crap talking type of game. Number 0, left cornerback Matt McDoom, who, by the way, I think that's probably the coolest name I've ever heard. 5'9", 180 pounds. Not only does he have the coolest name of all time, Matt McDoom, but he can back it up. He had a 100-yard pick 6 against OK State. But here's the impressive part. Usually a 100-yard pick 6, you know, in your own red zone, you pick it off and take it back to the house. Usually those pick 6s are poorly thrown out routes to a cornerback with kind of outside leverage waiting to pounce on the ball. Or maybe you have a free safety who's playing more inside leverage, more center of the field, that happens to jump a slant route. But no, this interception that Matt McDoom had, he's playing corner, and he gets beat on the inside slant route. He catches up to the route, reaches in front, picks it, and then he stops and runs back to the play sideline and just outruns the entire offense for 6 points. He's very, very fast. So definitely someone to pay attention to there. And number 0, Matt McDoom. Coverages in general, since he likes to go with a decent amount of cover 2, though they will mix in cover 1 when the down and distance call for it, you know, mostly anything 4 yards or less, or maybe some goal line situations, okay? In the red zone, since he doesn't really change their defense at all, they just stay 3-3-5, cover 2, and goal line or short yardage situations, they have kind of like a mirrored tush-push formation where their D-line splits, you know, their splits get a lot of tighter. They even have 1 or 2 linebackers kind of line up under center, as it were. So kind of some interesting things on the defensive side of the ball. Special teams, I think that's something that could be very huge, very notable in this game. Since his kicker, Steven Rusnak, is perfect this season. He's 37 for 37 on PATs. He's 11 for 11 on field goals with a long of 46 yards. He's scored 70 points for the Bearcats this year. What a weapon. Jumping into some offensive stats for Utah, defensive stats for Cincinnati. Utah produces 400 and almost 80 yards per game in offense, which is good for 13th in college football. Cincinnati, they only allow 300 and just shy of 70 yards per game, which puts them kind of middle of the pack. This stat definitely tilts Utah's way. A team that gives up almost 400 yards to a team that averages almost 500, you know, and that's where Utah doesn't even allow 290. Passing, Utah tends to throw for about 209 yards per game. Since his defense holds teams to 227 yards per game. I believe this is the most critical aspect of this game. For Utah offensively or for the Bearcats defensively, is can you stop Devin Dampier or Bird Ficklin from passing through the air, you know, trying to let it loose in the air? Utah is 91st. They aren't really good through the air, but since his defense isn't that far ahead, rushing, Utah gets about 265 yards per game, which is good for fifth in the country. And I think this is probably the bigger part here. Cincy's defense allows 150 yards rushing per game, which is good for 64th. This is where I think Utah breaks away from Cincinnati. The fifth-ranked rushing offense versus kind of a middle-of-the-pack run defense. As far as scoring is concerned, Utah scores 39 points a game, which is good for 11th in the country. And Cincy allows 19 points per game, which is good for 28th in the country. This game is an incredibly huge game. No one had circled it at the beginning of the year. If you'd have said that Cincinnati would end up being one of the most crucial games of the year, that College game day would be showing up, and any of these things, if you have said them to me, I'd have said you were crazy. But it's a huge game, and no, you're not crazy. This is certainly one game this year that has one of these two teams, you know, massively regretting what happens at the end of the game. I'm probably too biased, but I believe in my Utes. I believe in their offensive line. I believe they're strong. I believe in their strong rushing game. I believe in whichever quarterback shows up, whether it's Bird or Devin. I believe that either of those quarterbacks can win, you know, from the very first play of the game. I think that Utah is still angry after their loss to BYU. They're riding high after the domination we saw last week against Colorado. They're very much still, you know, with an angry or fiery focus. I think Cincinnati will likely give us more of a challenge than we were expecting, but I do think that Utah comes out on top of this game, likely somewhere between 35 to 21. That is it for today's scouting report. I hope it made sense to you. I hope it was useful information. If we look at our season predictions so far, again, I lost a couple more. I lost one more this last week, and I lost two, technically speaking, the week of Utah-BYU. I predicted Utah to win against Colorado, which I was 1-for-1. And then I predicted BYU to lose against Iowa State, which they did not. So I dropped a game there, to my happy surprise. We'll see next week how it pans out. We'll see if I predicted correctly, if I predicted incorrectly. In the meantime, this is your scouting report. I hope it helps you understand the game better. I hope it helps you, you know, feel more prepared and know what to look for when you're sitting on the couch on a Saturday evening watching the game. So grateful to you guys. I know it's late, not stringing words together very well, but that is this week's episode. Thank you so much, and go Utes.